Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hello, and welcome to yet another unforgettable installment of your favorite podcast, In Bed with Nick and Megan, starring Nick Offerman.
Good evening.
Megan Mullally. Good evening. And just today only, and for in perpetuity online, the gorgeous, hilarious, multi-talented, and good at being friends, Sarah Baker.
Yay. Hi, friends.
Hello.
I think since we know you so well, you know, we can just really let our hair down and let it all hang out.
I think that fanfare ended with a cannon.
Yeah.
If I have
we'll put that in and post.
My Foley sounds correct.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. How are you guys during these, the end of days?
I know. We are probably just like everybody else, right? Staying in and playing with our dogs, and not that everybody has dogs. And, you know, trying to deal, right?
Yeah. I've never wanted a dog more than right now.
We're very grateful that we have pets.
Oh, you don't have a dog?
No, I'm allergic to everything. It really, really stinks.
Remember how I used to make fun of your screen door, your back door?
Yes, it's the same, by the way.
That wasn't very nice.
It was hilarious. You'd also make fun of my lawn, which the lawn, admittedly at the time, was very bad.
It was really weedy.
It was,
you would post
still
these
weedy.
Pictures of like a cat outside, outside the door. It's like this crappy screen door. It's like part of it's falling off. And then this weedy yarn. I'd be like, wow, that is quite a setup you've got going over there.
It's at least
no
it's green
was
now.
No expense spared. I mean, you're on a series, so get a gardener maybe? I don't know.
I mean, I drive a 2000 Honda Civic, so I think we know.
Wait, are you super cheap? Did I not know this
I'm
about
not
you?
I'm not cheap. I would call it more lazy or procrastinating. But I will say when it comes to cars, I just don't really care about cars, so I'm sure it would be nice to have a new car, though. Even if I had a new crappy car, it would still be better. Because I can't, like, listen to, like, podcasts. I listen to the radio. I listen to, like, NPR.
K-Rock.
Yeah. I mean, I literally can't. I can't do anything. I can't make a phone call.
That's amazing. What kind of car is it? Did you say?
Yeah, Honda Civic.
Oh, Honda Civic.
2000.
Yeah,
it's a dependable ride.
Thank you. It is.
You can put a lot of miles on that Honda Civic.
And I have, though the odometer no longer fully functions. So I don't know exactly how many miles, but there's a lot.
Amazing.
I've also always, I lived in Atlanta before I moved here, and my whole life in Atlanta was in literally like a 5 mile radius of where I worked, in the theater where I worked, in my house. So I never put a lot of miles on it. Anyway, it's pretty cool.
I never go anywhere unless I'm getting paid to do so. So I never have miles. I've never really had a car that had a lot of miles on it, I don't think. Maybe yeah. When I was, you know, in my 20s or something. Yeah, I'm a shut-in.
I know. I do feel like in some ways I'm very prepared for this moment because as an actor, for one thing, I probably don't work more than I work, at least in general. So I'm used to being home. I mean, it's definitely weird not to like be able to see your friends and stuff, but.
And your hubby is a writer. He's a poet, yeah. Which I find very impressive.
Yeah, he's a poet and a teacher. So he teaches at UCSB. So they actually just started back today. They were on spring break, but he's able to do that, you know, from here now, weirdly. So
that's so cool.
But so he's here. Yeah, he's used to being here too.
Robert. And he has books.
He does have books. Yeah. Robert Krutt, Krut. He has a book called The Ocean. He has a book called The Spider Sermons. And his latest book is called, what is it called? The Now Dark Sky Setting Us All on Fire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
He saw it coming.
Yeah, he Prophecy. Did. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
It's very doomsday. And it was all written. I mean, it was written after Trump got elected mostly. So I guess that was. but like not quite so plain as it is now.
Wow. Well, I have been bad and naughty and I don't have any of his books, but I'm going to fix that.
You what?
I'm going to remedy that because I don't have any of his books.
Oh, I should send you.
I didn't want to, you know, come right out and say it, but
I don't think you're the one that's been
as
naughty,
payment
Megan.
For us letting you be on this podcast. You should send us
that's
money and those books. Yeah, that's how it works. So Sarah, you guys probably our dear listeners will know her from the Kominsky Method.
Maybe.
Which she has been on for lo these many seasons. You've got 3 seasons now, right?
Just 2. I shouldn't say we're supposed to do. We might do a 3rd, but it was already kind of up in the air. And now
You'd already shot the 3rd one.
No, yeah. You're right in thinking that we would have, because normally we would have been doing it the beginning part of the year, but it just didn't happen because schedule conflicts and I don't know stuff that people of a higher pay grade know about, but
oh my gosh,
and then global pandemic,
and then global pandemic, yeah,
yeah. Oh wow, well, it's a great show, you're great on it. You got a Critics' Choice Award for that show, right?
Yeah, we got something, I think we got a Golden Globe.
Didn't you get a? You got a SAG award.
I feel like I should know. Douglas got a SAG award for sure.
Yeah.
We didn't get a SAG award because I would have had to go up there.
I hosted it and you were sitting at
yes.
that table right in the front and we kept like winking and waving
yes.
and grabbing our boobs. That was
and
fun.
And meanwhile, everybody was like, "How do you know Megan Mullally?" I was like, "I know people."
You discovered me. I really did discover you.
Yeah,
in reality. Because I saw you on episodes of Kath and Kim with Molly Shannon. And I was like, who is that girl? I must know. And so I wrote your name down. And then not that long after that, maybe a couple of years later, you were on this show that I did that wasn't great. On ABC called In the Motherhood. And I was so happy to see you because I'd been, you know, unprofessionally stalking you. And then amateur stalking you, I guess I should say. I don't know if there's professional stalking, but I'm not, I don't think I was doing that.
I think there is professional stalking.
You, actually, Nick had hired me to stalk you, so I guess I was professionally stalking.
That's for sure professional then.
Yeah. And then.
Can I say what happened next?
Yes, please.
Well, okay, so I had met Megan doing her show, and I had like a co-star part. I had a tiny part. And you had just, I get a little, you had just seen me on Kath and Kim. Mm-hmm. Like it had aired fairly recently before that. And you're buds obviously with Molly. So you were watching every episode of Kath and Kim. Mm-hmm. And you were so nice to me the whole day we were shooting. Cause there was, I had a tiny part, but you were so super nice to me all day. And you were like, you know, like got my phone number that day. And I was like, this is crazy. Cause I was such a giant fan of yours going into that day. And then you went, I don't even know if you remember this, but you apparently, cause my friend Annie Mumolo wrote on that show.
Right.
And she like called me and was like, Megan Mullally came into the writer's room and was like, hey, that girl, Sarah, who played the nanny was really good. Like it'd be fun to have her back sometime. So they immediately wrote me back in. So I got to come do another episode.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even remember doing that.
Nice.
And then that, so this was in like,
I guess
the
we
spring.
Will take some free books from you.
Exactly. And then it gets even better. And then that summer, I had been in an episode of The Office that I think you just happened to watch. And so then this is the phone call I get. First of all, just that you called me, I was like, what's happening? And so, because we weren't really friends yet, we had just met, and I was still more in the fan category. And Megan was like, hey, they're looking for people, they're looking for women for Saturday Night Live. Do you mind if I call SNL and to recommend you? I was like, I guess I don't mind if you do that. And you did. And I freaking went to New York and auditioned for SNL.
Yay.
Wow. I mean, that's insane. Who does that?
They should have cast you. They're dumb. They're dummies.
But you know who they cast that year who was so good was Vanessa Bayer.
Yeah, and crazy. Adi Bryant. Vanessa and Adi. And who else?
I think that year it was Vanessa and Taryn, who I'm friends with. And
I can't, there's so much great talent. I can't keep them straight.
So wait a minute. All right. So those things happened. That was all good. And then the coolest thing that happened was you did an episode of the great but ill-fated show Louie that became quite, it was called Fat Lady, right?
It was called, something like that. So did the Fat Lady, or it was based on an old joke, but now I can't remember. Something like that. So did the Fat Lady or something.
And so you did that episode, and the whole episode basically was you and Louis C.K. Pretty much that was it, right? And
yeah.
So it became a huge thing. And then, yeah, so did the Fat Lady is the name of it. That's exactly right. And it became a big thing. And then the next thing I know, my little friend Sarah Baker is on the front of the New York Times Arts and Leisure section, giant picture of you and a big interview with you.
Boom.
Yeah, it was
fucking cool.
Extremely bonkers.
Yeah, so what, tell me about that episode. It was so good. You were so great in it. And
thanks.
You know, I know that because we ladies who, many of us who do comedy don't, you know, we always just have to play giant characters on television and or in whatever. and never get to play normal people, especially if we don't look like, you know, Julia Roberts or something.
Yeah.
And we're just relegated to these character roles in comedy. And then here you are suddenly getting to play just a normal person and, you know, 30 solid minutes of you and Louis C.K. kind of talking about deep things. And it was just so good. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was cast by Felicia Fasano and, but Pamela Adlon, who's the best, was there also because she lives out here and the audition was out here. And, you know, she obviously was working with Louis at the time. So, they wouldn't give us the sides in advance. So you basically had to show up and then they gave you time to like work on it. But it was the sort of monologue, which is what the episode ends with, which is this, it's a scene between Louis and I, but it's mainly this woman kind of going off on Louis about like men and women and relationships and why men think that like why somebody like him would think he shouldn't date somebody that looked like me. And, you know, I mean, Louis, you know, Jesus, what to say about that guy? Mm-hmm. But to his credit, with artistically anyway, I will say that, you know, a lot of people gave me a lot of credit for the episode, but it was all his words. You know, he wrote it. And I think he had felt like, you know, an unattractive fat person or whatever in his life too. So he kind of brought that to this role, but yeah, it was, you know, I'm so used to, especially at that time, so used to being like the come in, do a wisecrack and then leave, you know? So to get to just to say that many words, I was like, I've never said anywhere near this many words in anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was amazing to feel like you got the opportunity to like, I don't know, to show a little bit more of what I could do. And like you said, that, you know, to play a whole person and not to play really a stereotype of a person either. It wasn't like she was some like, you know, often in comedy I'm playing like she's single because of course she's single and she has 100 cats and you know is super awkward and weird or whatever, so it's nice to just play a woman who was like normal, yeah, maybe overweight, but like confident, cute, funny, you know, interesting, well, smart,
just like you are in real life, you know.
Thanks,
and in real life, you know, happily married and, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a cool thing. The other fun thing about the New York Times thing you were talking about is I had just gotten fired from a job like the week before. And then they were having the upfronts in New York. And I knew that, like, the people that fired me were there and like would see that and be
good.
Shit, maybe we shouldn't have fired her. Maybe they didn't think that at all. But yeah.
That's so satisfying.
Can I ask
it was
a
very
question?
Satisfying. Yes, please.
When you were describing auditioning for the episode, I was picturing something more along the lines of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where you're sort of given like an outline and then for the audition, you improvise with Larry or whoever the character that you're dealing with is. But then by the end of your story, I was like, oh, no, that's right. Louis wrote the show. It was a scripted show. It wasn't an improvised show.
Right.
And so I've never talked to somebody who worked on that show. That seems weird that you wouldn't receive the material. Was it a secrecy thing?
It was a secrety thing. Yeah. I think, I don't know if that's the way that show operated all the time. I don't think they auditioned for that show that much. Like, I think a lot of times he just
offered
probably cast
people. Yeah.
Yeah. Cast people he knew and they cast mostly out of New York. So I think they just hadn't found exactly what they had in mind. So that's why, you know, I even got a chance to audition for it here in LA. And I did get to improvise, like, once we, not so much in that last scene, but in other parts. In fact, it was a good lesson for me. And I didn't realize it until I was there, but I had this thing in my head that, like, because I think of myself obviously as an actor, not as like a comedian exactly.
Right.
And, you know, Louis is like a stand-up comedian. He writes, I mean, he's, you know, it's stories, but he writes jokes essentially. And I don't think of myself as like that kind of like, bam, you know, I don't know if you can tell from this interview, but I don't do jokes.
Wow. Crazy.
I'm just kind of a person, but, so I felt really nervous, weirdly, about trying to be funny in front of Louis, because I thought, well, that's going to just, I'm going to look like an idiot because I'm not funny like that.
But you then there was very, a scene. Very funny.
Well, thank you. But there was a scene where it was like, that they didn't even use, actually. It was Ed Norton. And I was, it was, he was playing himself, and I was, not Ed Norton.
Jim Norton.
Oh, my God. No, what that, not, no, but he was in that episode. Oh, God. Ed Burns.
Oh. Oh, right.
So he was supposed to be there and he was playing himself and I was supposed to be like flirting with him and we end up like kissing and stuff. Just totally like just as a waitress. We're just having fun. And the camera, they had shot my side and I was just, you know, it was just like going to be a moment really to see Louis react, seeing this woman. So we were just normal. And then the camera was on him and he was like, well, you know, just make me laugh. And I was like, okay. So then I started getting like kind of dirty and just being stupid because I knew the camera wasn't on me and it was just for him. And then he was like, God damn it. Why didn't you do that when the camera was on you? And luckily it was like a 3-man band. It was like a very limited crew and stuff. So they just turned the camera around and shot it again.
Oh, that's but I was great. Like,
yeah, it was a good lesson for me. And like, look, you're there for a reason. Like, you know, don't try to make yourself small to fit what you think is supposed to be happening here, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's a good one. Good lesson. Yeah. Well, and then, well, so that was just like a huge thing. I mean, that was a huge kind of a, it was great for everyone. And I mean, it was great for women in general and men, but it was great for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It I mean, I think
I want to note that Nick has now left the podcast.
Did he just break up with you I or think me or both of
we're
us?
We're getting a divorce. Yeah. Pretty sure that's God. What that means.
He could have said something.
I know. It goes out with a that whimper instead shit. Of a bang.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, there he said his piece, and now we have to live with it.
Yeah. That was a quick breakup after 20 years. And then
no,
he was gone. Wait, he's back. We've reconciled.
Back.
Yeah, we've reconciled. I knew he'd be back.
Was making a noise.
I wasn't even that worried.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Okay, Sarah, so one of the topics that you thought we could discuss today was embarrassing moments. So I'm intrigued because that means that you must have embarrassing moments and I want to hear what they are.
I have an abundance of embarrassing moments.
Okay, good.
I mean, I feel like you are probably the same way, where some of the embarrassing things that happen in terms of like jobs or the industry, actually, even within feeling the shame, I am also laughing at how funny it is in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? As opposed to like the stuff that happens to you when you're 13, where it's not funny at all in the moment and only later. Like now it's sometimes harrowing. Stuff happens and I'm just like, oh, wow, this is really embarrassing for me, but how hilarious that this is happening.
All right, tell us one.
Okay. So I did an episode of The Office. And I was nervous. I had worked, but I don't feel like I'd done a ton up until that point. And this was a show like I actually watched, you know, so it felt like crazy to be like, you know, that I was going to be on it. And oh, and I'd had a weird thing the day that we were shooting where I, like my SAG, I hadn't officially joined SAG yet. And they were kind of like, you might not be able to join in time. And then they'll have to recast you. And I was like, you know, when you're an actor, like just starting and you finally get something and then they're like, oh yeah, they're casually kind of like, you might not get to do this part. You know, you freak out. So anyway, so I already had a day. Harold Ramis is directing. It was Groundhog Day, which I kept saying to people and nobody cared. I was like, but he did the movie and it is Groundhog Day and we're here with him. And everybody was like, okay.
And he keeps saying going again.
Exactly. Back to one. So there was a scene. So I was like playing the delivery nurse for Jim and Pam and they're having their baby, their first baby. And they were, you know, it's an important scene for their character. So there was a lot of discussion about like balancing sort of the comedy of it, but also having it be able to be a tender moment for them. And so there was a lot of changes, you know, coming at me and like even sometimes just reordering things. And so I was, you know, I was like, definitely at the height of my like anxiety, but you know, I was okay. And we're getting ready to roll on the scene. And, you know, I sort of felt very tenuously like I understood what was going to happen in the scene. And all of a sudden I had this feeling, dear listeners, like I had to pass wind. And I was like, I could tell. You know, I hope this isn't too gross for you guys, but you know, you can tell like this is going to happen. This is not like this is not one that I can like squeeze back into my body.
It's past the gate. It's in the foyer. Yeah,
exactly. It's going to happen. And I knew it wasn't going to, it would just be like that. It wouldn't be like anything massive, but at the same time, I mean, it was literally like, okay, you know, rolling cameras. And I was like, if I fart in this scene, I will turn into ash and die. If that is captured with like John Krasinski, Harold Ramis is directing, you know, all. So I had to make the decision that I was like, just 1 second. And I marched away. We're on like a hospital set. I like marched as far away as I could get, as quickly as I could get. But there was tons of extras all dressed in like patient gear. And I just literally marched away, farted, and then marched right back like a psychotic person. Like all those people were just probably thought I was I don't know, disturbed, disgusting.
They probably knew what you were doing since you came right back. What else would you have been doing? I mean, everybody knew, let's face it.
I mean, I was mic'd. And not that it was so loud, but it was, I basically, it looked to anybody like I like marched away, farted on a bunch of background artists, and then came back.
That's exactly what you did, though.
That is what I did. What else could I do?
That's something, I mean, actually, it was probably not that big of a deal because a lot of us, that's something that we do to background artists to let them know.
Yes.
It's like marking, it's like a dog marking the yard.
Their territory.
Like just let
you and Chris Pratt used to, they didn't politely walk away. They were in a competition to see who could fart the longest and
we
the loudest.
Love to rip one on camera.
Oh my God, Nick is like a farting ninja. Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, the best one we did was right at the end of Parks and Rec. I think it was an episode where it was everybody was having their bachelor party. So all the guys were together, and at one point, so that it's, you know, me, Pratt, Aziz, Adam Scott, Rob Lowe, and Jim O'Hare standing in a tight circle, and we're talking, you know, Aziz is like laying out some plan or something, and I, you know, gleefully just ripped a massive high volume ripper, and within like half a second, Pratt harmonized with it and came in with like a, you know, a superhero's fart. And I said, how did you do that? He said, I don't know. I didn't, my body just answered. You're like heard.
It's like catching a sneeze.
It was like wolves howling at the moon.
Or catching a yawn. I mean,
yeah, it was amazing.
That's so funny.
It was a really good job.
Nick, his gas extends to way beyond just pranks on set. And I am almost always the reluctant recipient.
Megan loves a good joke. But here, for future reference, that is amazing because that it is mortifying to imagine being in that situation.
Yes.
But now that you've established yourself as a woman of gravity, to be taken seriously as a performer, next time let it fly and wink at somebody. Like, oh, that is a powerful performer.
I don't know if I would ever be that person.
I'm trying to think of embarrassing stories, and I can think of a couple, two or three. One of them was, This one is embarrassing, and I also feel really bad about it. Like, it's embarrassing slash heartbreaking and terrible. I was leaving, I don't know, I think it was the Golden Globes or something one year. I had gone, Nick wasn't there that year, and I had gone to the after party with Conan O'Brien and his wife Liza O'Brien. And we were getting ready to leave, and they said, well, wait here. And they were going to go, you know, see where the car was. And so I was kind of waiting nearby. And Jeremy Irons was waiting nearby. And I'd never met him, but he was very nice. I must say I was, you know, this was back during, this was, you know, 15 years ago or something. And I was wearing some kind of low cut dress. And I don't think he was entirely interested in me as a man can be interested in a woman. I'm not saying he was, you know, gonna ask me to marry him, but I think there was a teeny element of that because it was a very long conversation. So we're standing there and I don't know how we got on the subject, but I said that my favorite classic piece of literature was Lolita, which, yes, that's a whole other conversation. And he said, oh, well, have you seen the films? And I said, yeah. I said, I love the original with James Mason. I don't know what happened. I was in a weird, something happened where my brain wasn't functioning correctly in that moment. And I didn't remember that he literally played Humbert Humbert in the remake, which came out, I don't know, around 2000 or in the 90s or something.
Yeah.
So he played that, he did the lead in a remake of Lolita. And I said, I really didn't like the remake.
Oh my
and
God.
It was just like, it was just kukraka in Haffa. Like his cute little sweet little face just like collapsed. And he seemed so unhappy. And I thought, gosh, why is he, I mean, he might have liked the remake better. Why is he so upset about it? And then I don't even know when I realized. I think while we were still standing there together, I realized, oh shit, like that was his movie. And so I was like, I mean, I liked that one a lot. I loved it. It was great. I loved it, loved it, loved it. But maybe there was something about the original. I don't even know. It's just something in a situation that you can't. Because what I should have done is say, oh my, I mean, what are you going to say? Like, I'm sorry. I just now realized you're the lead in that movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. Cause then it's even worse. It's like, you didn't even remember, but what, oh God, it was horrible.
Well, that's what's awful about it. Cause really you were just being brutally honest and that's what he knew. He was like, she doesn't realize it's me. So she's just giving her honest opinion that movie was
yes.
horrible.
Well, you know, ooh. Yeah, because it wasn't, that it was terrible. It was that I just liked the other one better. And since that's my favorite right. book, I have strong opinions about it. But also, I just didn't realize when I was talking to him, of course, that it was him. So that was super, super duper embarrassing. And what other crazy... I have another one that's similar to that, which is I was... leaving the Tonys. It's all after award shows, apparently. I was leaving the Tonys, and I had been presenting. And Nick was there with me. And again, it's all at the valet parking. I was standing there waiting. Nick had gone to get the car. And I was just thinking, oh, my God, I did it. I got in and out without, like, some horrible incident. Like putting my foot in my mouth, and I'm standing there waiting, and this really lovely young blonde actress comes up to me and says, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting you. I am your biggest fan. You're so blah, 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 on and on, just being so nice and saying the nicest things. And I was like, that is so nice of you to say, oh my gosh, well, I'm a big fan of yours too. I said, I really loved you in that movie. And I named a movie, and there was a pause, and her whole face just like turned into an iceberg. And she said, that was Julia Stiles. And it was Claire Danes who I was actually talking to. And they had both presented, and they were both wearing like red dresses or something. She was like, well, she's a really good friend of mine, but... that's Julia Stiles. And I was like, oh, but I, and then I saw, and I, you know, you'd like to think that if somebody is your biggest fan, that it could survive that pretty innocent right. mistake, because, you know, I hate to say it, but young blonde actresses, yeah. I mean, come on. So,
and clearly not intentional.
No. What else? Do you have other embarrassing, what's your embarrassing story, Nicholas?
I mean, because I'm a bit of a clod, it's hard for me to feel embarrassed because, when I do something clumsy or make a misstep, I'm already halfway to like, oh, of course. Thanks. Good to see you all. I'll see myself out. But I was thinking about it, and I guess I was pretty embarrassed when we were living in Seattle because Megan was in the Broadway production of the musical Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And they did a couple months in Seattle before moving it to Broadway. And from these New York people, the Broadway people in the show, I found out that they were doing a production of my favorite Harold Pinter play, The Birthday Party, or The Homecoming. The Homecoming, I think. And it was with Ian McShane and Eve Best, and it was going to be on Broadway. And I said, oh my God, I desperately want to audition for this play. And so I had my agent, like, you know, I jumped through several hoops. They refused to see me. This is before Parks and Rec.
2008.
So I'm unknown. But I had done some stuff. I mean, I should be able to get an audition for a play. So finally, they agreed to let me like fly myself in and audition for their play. So I did. And like, as soon as I started my first scene, he like laid his head down on his arms, like forehead.
He put his whole forehead down on his arms on the table.
And not even, I mean, I hadn't even done anything. It wasn't a reaction to me being so terrible or something.
Right.
It just, he was like, I don't even, like, I'm going to take a nap because this doesn't matter. And that was incredibly humiliating. And, you know, I'm sure I was perfectly mediocre and like,
well, and it's, I'm sure, insanely
after
rude.
That, how do you go on after that?
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that the situation was, they already had somebody picked out or whatever, but then don't see me.
Well, yes.
It was pretty horrible.
Well, and there are a lot of things like that I find where there is that just, I don't know, there's like the physiological response of those moments where you do feel like deep shame. And especially as actors, I think sometimes you're like, oh, yep, just what I suspected. They know I'm terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But then later you're like, wait, no, that was rude. Yeah. That wasn't my, that's not on me. That's on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one other thing when I was in my early 20s living in Chicago and just doing a lot of theater. And I was doing a lot of musicals, and every once in a while I'd do a play, but it was like a light comedy, you know. And so I don't know why I decided to do it, but I decided to audition for a Shakespearean play that was, it was a rep company. It was like a summer stock, you know, or like a rep company that was doing Shakespeare. And so I had never done Shakespeare, and I had never auditioned for a Shakespearean play. And so I prepared my audition, and I thought, okay, so what can I wear that looks Shakespearean, that where they're going to think, oh my God, like, where's she been all our lives? And so I picked out this, you know, white blouse and this long gray skirt. And I thought, holy shit, when they see me, they're going to be like, they're going to cast me before I even audition, just based on my outfit alone. And so I get there, and, you know, there's a bunch of people there and waiting and waiting. And then I ran into the bathroom because I had to pee. I go into the bathroom. And then just as I'm coming out of the bathroom, the casting director was like, are you Megan? And I said, yeah. She goes, okay, we're ready for you. So I'm like, okay. So I go in and I do my monologue, and I think, oh, snap, I nailed that shit. And I turn on my heel with a flourish, and I start prancing out of the room. And they're all sitting behind a long table, you know. And I hear, oh, Megan. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck, they're going to offer me the part, like, right on the spot.
Oh, no.
And I turn around, they're like, your skirt is tucked into the back of your underwear.
No. So,
my entire butt was like,
no.
My crazy lollipop underpants were like flapping in the wind as I flounced out of my Shakespearean audition. That was the most truly embarrassing thing that I can remember happening in that kind of context.
That's rough.
Literally showing your ass. A lot of times you just feel spiritually like we're showing our ass, but you actually showed your ass.
Well, that's what we do for a living, is like put ourselves in the most emotionally vulnerable position day in and day out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what trashy television shows we're watching right now.
I mean, it feels ubiquitous to even say, but we did just finish Tiger King last night.
Yeah. So good, right?
It was, I mean, it was definitely, I think I knew what I was in for a little bit, in the sense of those kinds of shows to me, sometimes that people are like, oh my God, it's so fun and crazy. I'm like, oh, it's very dark and depressing to me.
Yeah.
But this was like enough of a balance that I was like, it's just a world that I didn't even know existed. So that's a lot of what was so interesting about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know,
yeah, we had no idea that there were these little like amateur zoos. I've never even heard of that before. It's so crazy.
Or that there were that many tigers in the United States of America. No idea.
The main show that I will carry with me until the end, that we recently watched the second season of, and I'm just hoping either that you've seen it or haven't seen it, because either one is good, Temptation Island.
I have not seen it. I have heard about it. It's British, right?
Sarah, Run, Don't Walk. No.
Really?
No, it's Americano. Only the Americans could come up with this sick shit. It is so twisted. It should be illegal.
It on a long time ago, or is it current?
Yeah.
Maybe I did.
It was on a long time ago, but now it's back. So this is the second season of, like, it was on 10 years ago, or I don't know, longer maybe. And now it's back, but it's way worse and better.
Well, I think I did see, maybe, I don't think I necessarily stuck with the whole thing, but I definitely saw part of it when it was first on.
It's really good. Please, you and Robert will thank us later. What else are you watching?
Well, I know you guys watched Two Survivor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. This season is so good.
So good.
Ugh.
I do find, like, and Survivor is one of those shows that, even though I love it, I haven't always watched. Like, I think I watched maybe the first two seasons, and then I think it was, like, before I had a DVR, and, like, there was something else that took priority on that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was something really embarrassing, like maybe America's Next Top Model or something. But anyway, so I dipped out for a while, but then my friend, Michael Snow, was on... Like, I think it was, he was on Survivor Cara Moen, maybe. I don't know. But it was one of those where some of the people were old and some were new. And he got kind of the shit under the stick. But anyway, it brought me back into the show.
Whatever it takes.
Welcome back.
To get you back on board.
Yeah.
Come on in, guys.
I did the same thing. We watched the first few seasons and then we didn't watch it for a while and then we started again. But I actually went back. Nick didn't, but I went back and watched all the seasons that I had missed, and they're all so good.
It's really great.
Well, and it's probably better now because you know all, because I do feel like watching the season, even though it's incredible on its own, but I don't know all of these players. I don't know all the ins and outs of what they did on their seasons. And I also feel like I kind of flush, no offense, I'm sure they're great people, but reality show contestants, as soon as the show is over, they just evacuate from my brain.
Almost all of them, but there are a few memorable ones.
Yeah.
But almost all of them, yeah. But yeah, I think that's why reality TV is so good, is because it's such great escapist entertainment. And, you know, when you just really want to unplug and not think about anything, there's nothing like it. I mean, it's also great to be really snobby and love cool indie things and avant-garde things. Good art.
I try to like watch PBS and like as something that I would characterize as enriching so that I'm not just watching garbage all the time.
It's how you survive with any menu. You know, you should try and shoot for delicious nutrition often, but also you got to cheat and go get some fast food garbage that's been engineered to bring you pleasure. Vapid empty calories.
They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Especially right now. I'm kind of in full whatever gets you through the night mode right now.
Yeah, because we're recording this during the time of coronavirus, in case you hadn't guessed. It's all hands on deck.
And soothing things too. Like, do you watch the Great British Baking Show?
You know, I watched that when I was in London, and I loved it. But I haven't. Yeah, we would love watching that, I think. And yeah, we're not bakers or any. You don't need to be a baker or anything like that.
No,
I mean, you're a Sarah Baker.
I am a Sarah Baker. I was almost Sarah Lee Baker because my dad's middle name is Lee.
Wow.
But that would have been really bad.
Over the top. I was almost Sheila Mullally. That's not cute.
Sheila, you would make a good Sheila.
Okay.
I mean, you're very much a Megan, but...
You could pull off Sheila.
You could for sure pull off Sheila.
Yeah. I knew a Sheila who used to teach a pole dancing class that was quite popular. She was the first to do that. So I guess I could have, maybe I would have been a pole dancing teacher.
I could see that.
Not that all Sheilas are, but most of them are, let's face it.
let's be honest, most are.
And then, I was also going to say, in terms of soothing, there's this great app called Insight Timer. It's a weird name, Insight Timer. And do you ever meditate?
I have Headspace on my phone, and I have a friend who's doing just literally 2 weeks has been doing every Sunday at 1 o'clock, a guided meditation,
mm-hmm.
which I do I need a guide. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert level to where I can just do that. My brain will just go.
Yeah. There's no expert level. I mean, all you really need to do is just sit with your spine straight and focus on your breathing, or, you know, you're going to have thoughts come in your mind and just let them go back out. But Insight Timer is really nice because you can pick a little soundtrack for your meditation. So you can pick, you know, the ocean or birds chirping in a tree or whatever. And you then pick your sound, and then you can set the time that you'd like to meditate for, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever. And it gives you little nice soothing chimes every 2 minutes to kind of give you an idea of where you're at. And also on the same app, so that's kind of nice, they also have guided meditations that are really great. And they have tons of them. And then they also have just talks that a variety of people have given and are giving on, relaxing spiritual topics. But right now, of course, almost everybody's talking about how to deal with the anxiety of this and how to not go crazy and et cetera. So I recommend that. That's my
best I'm gonna check that
tip.
Out. I also like that people like Rufus Wainwright is doing
a
song a day on Instagram.
Somebody sent me
so
lovely. Nice. I mean, he doesn't need to go back and punch anything in. His pitch is
insane.
Perfect. He's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so good. That's really nice. There are a lot of good things like that. I just discovered, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with anything like that, but Molly Shannon actually just tipped me off that if you download the New Yorker app, some of their articles are also on Audible.
Oh.
Audio via Audible, I think. So, there's this article right now that people are really liking with Fiona Apple, and it's also, you can listen to it while you're freaking out or whatever you're doing in the moment. So I'm very excited about that, too.
Yeah, I do think it's good right now. Like, I know for me, I'm trying to kind of like what you're saying, Nick, about like nourishment. Like, I'm taking a more active role in trying to like feed myself good things, you know, like, yeah, like an interesting podcast or, you know, good music or, yeah, all these mm-hmm. people who are doing these sort of creative things right now, mm-hmm. which I think is good, because I think sometimes when we're busy or just doing our normal lives, at least for me, I just don't take time for stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't have, you know, 20 minutes to meditate. I for sure do. I just right now I'm so concerned with not losing my mind that I'm actively like feeding myself. So that's a good thing.
It is good. And something, I mean, as terrible as this time is and scary and sad and horrible, something I believe that something really good will come out of it, something that's lasting. And that, you know, remains to be seen, maybe a few things, or, I mean, I'm hoping that at least something of consequence, but maybe it will have to do with community or, with, you know, just, you know, this rare time of quietness and stillness, you know, just sparking things in people, creativity, et cetera.
Yeah. And appreciation and for little things. And
yeah. Well, listen, little Miss Sarah Baker, or my bunny, as I call you.
And now we have pretty fun nicknames for each
really
other.
Yeah, I'm so excited that you came on, and I'm appreciative, and Nick is appreciative that you were able to do this today.
Oh,
and
my God. Thank you for having me.
I'm just going to call you Sarah, though.
No, that's, yeah, you're not part of that. And that's fine. It's not it's just something that Megan and I have.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He has a nickname for you, but it's kind of offensive, and I asked him not to use it.
False.
I'll text it to you. But don't take it personally. He means it
old
in a nice
dirt
way.
Clod. I mean,
dirt.
Yeah, I get it.
I
see
charming.
It.
Yeah,
I mean, it's cute.
That's my thing.
I mean, I can't honestly say I don't see it. You know,
I see it in a good way. All right, Sarah, we love you.
I love you guys. Take care of yourselves.
You too. Thank you
Say
for being
with
us.
Say hi to the beautiful Robert Crutch. And
I will.
You guys have been listening to yet another installment of In Bed with Nick and Megan, featuring Sarah Baker. Good night.
Good evening.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.